Okay, let's get this audio conference underway. Hi, and welcome to the 2-in-1 Geothermal Virtual Field Trip. I'm Donald DeLearn's teacher, and it's Wednesday, the 1st of March, and it's 12:15. If you are listening to an archive of this audio conference, remember you can browse the website as you listen. Now, this is our second audio conference, and our topic is on any aspect of geothermal activity and power in New Zealand. And today we're at Wairaki and overlooking the Western Borefield. And we can see in front of us pipes, steam, silencers, flash plants, wellheads, all lying along the fault plane below us, probably 30 metres below us. And sitting on my right, I have got Mike Rosenberg. And welcome along, Mike. Can you tell us what you do for a job?
Thanks very much, Donald. I work for a Crown Research Institute. We've recently just changed our name from the Institute of Geological and Nuclear Sciences, which you might know us as previously. We're now called GNS Science. My job is as a geologist specialising in volcanoes and geothermal systems, and I've been helping Contact Energy make use of the Wairaki resource and the other geothermal resources in the North Island. And this afternoon I'd like to help explain some of the reasons why the geothermal system is here and the things that make it special.
Excellent, and with that, we'll get straight into the first question. Now, Garran College have another commitment. Our geographers have prepared the questions and sent them off, but we're unable to be here at this exact time, so we're going to get Joan to ask the questions, and they're going to access them as soon as they can, later in the day probably, or rather tomorrow. Okay, with that, first question please for Mike.
Hi, Garran's first question is, how does the geothermal area of Wairaki fit in with the New Zealand and global pattern of geothermal and plate tectonic activity?
Right, well, some of the classes will have been looking at plate tectonics, and you'll know that New Zealand is part of the boundary between the Pacific plate and the Australian plate. Now, on the eastern side, the Pacific plate is being subducted underneath the Australian plate, but that changes in the centre of New Zealand and through the Southern Alps, and the reverse situation is true off the west coast of the South Island. So there we've got the Australian plate being subducted beneath the Pacific plate. The plate boundary is what we term an oblique convergent margin, and that means that instead of the plates just coming together in a sort of a square boundary, there's a bit of a twist in there. The plates are coming together at about 50 millimetres a year, so as well as the convergence, we've also got active extension. So off the east coast of the North Island, we've got the plate diving underneath, but through the centre of the North Island, the Taupo Volcanic Zone represents an area of active extension. That means the Australian plate is actually being slowly stretched apart. The reason that's important in terms of geothermal systems and volcanic systems is that the crust is being thinned. It's being thinned very rapidly, and that means that the heat generated in the Earth's mantle is very easy for that heat to get up to the surface. There are two ways that it does this. One is through the active volcanic systems, and the other is natural heat flow that manifests itself at the surface as the geothermal systems. We have, in the order of 15 to 20, I'm not sure the exact number, but let's say around 15, what we term high temperature geothermal systems in the North Island. if you imagine, you may be aware of the Taupo volcanic zone stretching in a broad V shape from Ruapehu Tongariro volcanoes in the south, northeastwards and offshore of the Bay of Plenty coast, roughly between Whakatane and Tauranga. So those geothermal systems exist in that area because we've got the high heat flow, but we've also got the active extension, which gives us a whole series of faults. Most faults allow circulation of the geothermal fluids, and because those are active faults that maintain the whole system. I mentioned high temperature geothermal systems, and we're interested in those from an economic perspective because those are the ones that we can use for generating generating electricity.
Great. And that was a particularly good explanation of the Taupo volcanic zone, Mike. I sat here riveted to that. Okay, second question, please.
Thanks, I've got lots of notes there. Question number two is, how impressive is this geothermal area on a global comparison basis? Is it spectacular, interesting, run-of-the-mill, unique?
I guess that's kind of subjective because no matter where you travel in the world, chances are you're going to come across a geothermal system. The New Zealand ones are scientifically interesting and scientifically unique in the world for lots of reasons. What I'm looking at in front of me now, I have to say, it's not greatly impressive. Wairakei, because it's been utilized for power generation for 40, 45 years, there have been some changes in the surface features that you will know as features typical of geothermal fields. Now, the things I'm thinking of in general are things like mud pots, hot springs, areas of thermotolerant vegetation that's specially adapted to the high heat flow and acid ground conditions. Geysers, big areas of the geothermal sinter, the silica sinter. Now, Wairakei did have some of those features prior to the 1940s, but as a consequence, I guess, of natural changes in the system and changes induced by the power generation, some of those things have changed. Each geothermal field around the world has its own unique features. Now, I think of Yellowstone National Park. Everybody knows that as lots of geysers and a huge tourist draw card. There are areas in Iceland that have spectacular natural scenery. There are areas in Indonesia, Philippines, where there's a geothermal system on the side of an active volcano. Wairakei definitely has its merits, and certainly scientifically it's unique. So no, you'd never say that geothermal systems run of the mill.
Just a quick question, Mike, do you only get geothermal fields at plate boundaries?
No, you don't, and in fact Yellowstone National Park is right in the middle it's away from a plate boundary.
Now, the third question follows on nicely. Can we have that, please?
What natural landforms are associated with this geothermal area? Which are the most notable and why?
The landscape that we see in front of us is a landscape formed by volcanic processes, and in fact the geothermal systems more or less anywhere in the world, are an overprint on a pre-existing landscape. So at Wairakei, it's hilly topography that was that's been created in a thick volcanic deposit called the Aruanui Ignimbrite. Now that's a huge volume volcanic deposit that was erupted from Taupo about 26,500 years ago, and since then it's obviously been modified by the normal landscape forming features. Notwithstanding that, the Wairakei field has some interesting local features. There are some geothermal warm lakes called the Alum Lakes. Those are lakes that fill in old explosion craters, hydrothermal explosion craters. There is an area called the informally called the Geyser Valley, and that's an area where until the 1940s there were geysers, hot springs, areas of geothermal center. We also have around the edges of the Wairakei field, which I should note extends from Wairakei here right through to Taupo, approximately 7 or 8 kilometres away. Now, on the edges of the system, that's where some of the hot springs come to the surface. It's a natural discharge of the warm springs. So there are some small local features. But some of you may know of the Waiotapu or Waimangu geothermal fields closer towards Rotorua. Those have more spectacular natural features, but then again, they haven't been modified by human use.
So I love the way, through your answers, Mike, you are able to tell us about the effect of humans, the landscapes, and how one, the processes that work and the way they interrelate. Great for these geographers. Question four, please, and then we'll have the competition.
Question four. Do other natural processes interact with volcanism in this area to form distinctive landscapes? How do these natural processes interact, and what are the results on the landscape?
Obviously the landscape is formed by volcanic processes. We've got the Aruanui eruption and more recently the Taupo eruption, which has effectively mantled the entire landscape with a metre or two of pumice and ash deposits. So the material is weak and unconsolidated, and it's very easy to erode. And that's still true now, almost 2,000 years later. We have the Waikato River, which effectively cuts through the middle of the Wairakei system, that's between here and Taupo, and that river channel is in part guided by the old landscape, but it's also affected because the geothermal fluids come to the surface near the Waikato River, and they have cemented that soft volcanic ground with silica cement. So you've got a hard, resistant material that the river has got to get around and through. And that silica-cemented material is where the Hooker Falls come in. Some of you may have seen pictures of the Hooker Falls or may even have visited there. The natural processes... Certainly they are overprinting on the original landscape.
I never realised nature made its own concrete. Yeah, right. Next, our competition. Now, during this field trip, we're running in competition to name three features, objects, or concepts to do with geothermal power. And what you have to do is find one answer a day, and when you know the answers for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, complete the online entry form. Winning entries go in the draw for a magnificent $1,200 Polycom sound station, courtesy of Contact Energy and NASNET Technologies. Now, today's three clues are: I separate water and steam, second clue is, I work by dropping pressure. And the third clue is, I'm man-made and create flashed steam. So I might have mentioned it already, or it might be coming up, and it'll be repeated in my diary, the answer to that. And all you have to do is get that competition entry in online by Monday the 20th of March. Great prize, so do be in to win that for your school. And that brings us to our second set of questions about the influence of people. Question five, please.
Question five. How have people harnessed the energy created by tectonic forces, both in traditional Maori culture, that is in pre-European times, and today in areas like tourism, energy and minerals?
I can see when you got the word minerals, old Mike's face lit up here.
Okay, well, I think if we start with a pre-European Maori perspective, the Wairakei resource, I think Maori regarded the resource, the geothermal field, as both a resource and a taonga, a sort of a spiritual and physical treasure, if you like, something that was available to use for cooking, for hanging out in the winter when there's a nasty frost on the ground. And I guess from a resource perspective also, some raw materials, perhaps some of the coloured clays might have been useful for various purposes. I guess I'm more familiar with the modern day uses of the field, and certainly tourism is a big one. The Wairakei field is accessible directly off State Highway 1, so people travelling between Rotorua and Taupo, or from Hamilton or Auckland down through Taupo heading south, it's right there. There are lookouts available, the steam field you can drive straight through, and there it is. Recent times, some of the hot water that would otherwise have gone to waste has been used to recreate some silica terraces, and I think a geyser. They've managed to get a geyser system working. So as a display area, that's something that's been used there. Obviously, in terms of energy, we have the power station, and I think that's been going in the order of 45 years. There's recently the new second stage power station been commissioned by Contact Energy, and that's improved the efficiency of how the resource is used. Minerals, one of the important things in terms of mineral resources that geothermal systems create, metals. Now, obviously, not all of the metals are valuable, and some have environmental consequences. I'm thinking of metals like arsenic, mercury, cadmium, some of the heavy metals. But we also have some rare metals which have specific industrial applications, and of course there's a possibility of gold and silver. The economic minerals are being deposited in the active systems now, and in the extinct geothermal systems, those minerals may be available as an ore deposit. We also have alteration of pre-existing volcanic and sedimentary material. An example of that is material called zeolite. A zeolite is effectively your kitty litter material, and that's been created by alteration of old lake sediments, and that's a quite different sort of mineral resource. Yes, plenty of resource available.
And when you were answering that, Mike, I was thinking about what you were saying about State Highway 1 and the accessibility. We're looking over the flash plants in front of us and the steam coming out, and we can see State Highway 1 about a kilometre away, so we're really close. And if you're not sure, flash plants are where the pressure drops in the hot water, and steam is created when the pressure drops. So there's sort of half a dozen of them in front of me here, and some silencers as well. And I thought too about, you were saying about tourism, you can go not far from where we can see here. You can go down to the prawn farm using the hot water here, and sit there, have your prawns, and go for a ride in the jet boat or two up to Hooker Falls. Now, that brings us to question 6 and 7.
Question 6. How well managed is this natural resource? What issues have arisen in managing the resource? If there are any problems, how are they being resolved?
I believe that the Wairakei resource is probably the best managed resource that we have at the moment. There are, I guess, two reasons for that. One is because Contact Energy and its predecessors have 40-something years of experience in monitoring the geothermal reservoir itself and the environmental effects. The second reason that it is very well managed is because it has to be. There is this thing called the Resource Management Act, which dictates that if you're going to use a natural resource, then you must assess and minimize environmental impacts. So, Contact Energy have they currently hold resource consents to manage the resource, to use it for the power production, and those resource consents come up for renewal every few years. And I guess that renewal process is kind of a stock take to say, okay, well, where are we at? What has changed? Are there issues that we need to change our approach? As I said before, prior to 1940, there were the natural surface features, the geysers, the hot springs, etc., and largely as a result of drawing down the steam and fluid in the bore field, those features have dried up. However, on the other hand, we have an area called the Karapiti Thermal Area, sometimes known as Craters of the Moon. That area has actually been enhanced because of the changes in the bore field. There are some ground subsidence issues that some of you may be aware of, and effectively that is also a consequence of drawing down and draining the shallow geological formations. That process is certainly not exclusively the product of Contact Energy's use of the resource, because in Taupo there are a lot of domestic hot water bores which extract water from the shallow aquifers, and there has certainly been some ground subsidence there as well. So the management, the monitoring, and looking after the resource is an ongoing process.
Now we'll move quickly through our last two questions, because we're running out of time, but question 7, please.
Are there any negative impacts on people's lives arising from the use or proximity of living in this area? And how well understood are issues involved with conservation and sustainable use of this resource?
Okay, and I'll just quickly add, I've seen one negative impact. If you go, you've got to be careful around these geothermal fields because of carbon dioxide and hydrogen sulfide building up in some places. So I suppose we'll put dying in a hole because of those gases, the negative impact. But anyway, for a more... Yeah, Mike, quick answer.
Right, I think I can answer both these questions together. Yes, there's certainly certainly are some negative impacts, but I think most people would regard those impacts as fairly low grade. More of a nuisance value, I think. Yes, there are occasionally issues with, really only in the Wairaki area, with the smell of the hydrogen sulfide and sulfur dioxide gases. Yes, the ground subsidence is an issue. It obviously affects any built structures, both domestic housing and industrial housing and all the lifelines, the power and water and what have you. But again, that's something that is a result of the whole community using this resource. The question about how well understood are these issues, again, that comes back to the resource consenting process. That process is not simply assessing temperatures and heat flow and geology and the sort of technical physical aspects, but it's also to say, okay, how do people feel about what's happened? What are the changes in the thermal vegetation? That's an important conservation value. There are certainly some unusual ecosystems, biological communities in those areas, and part of the consenting process is to look at those changes. So yes, it's, as I said before, it's an ongoing process.
Thanks, Mike. Great answers. I'm sure that the geographers at Garran and the listening schools have got a great deal from your answers, and thanks also for your you just move so easily and naturally through them, and clearly your experience shows. We thank you for that on their behalf. And with that, we're off to have a look at a drill rig. Or we're going to have a look inside a turbine, depending whether the drill rig has started. Have a look at my diaries, the images, watch the videos, and enter the competition. And join us again tomorrow when we're actually going to have a detailed look inside those amazing steam turbines and generators. So join us then, and that brings our audio conference to an end. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks very much, Donald.